We're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Now that we talked about kosher and non-kosher birds the last couple of days, let's start talking about eggs. So the Mishnah is talking about a loichen beitzim in chavim b'chol makom. We're allowed to buy eggs from goyim anywhere, even in places where there are lots of non-kosher birds. But in chushin lemishum nevelas lemishum treifas, we don't have to be concerned that the egg came from a nevela or a treifa, and it may have been found in a dead chicken, or from a treifa. Because those kinds of things are not common. Nevelas and treifas are not that common enough to have to worry about that. So the question is, fine, you don't have to worry about nevelas or treifas, but v'dum al de'ov tamei ninu, maybe they're from a non-kosher species. So Amar Avor d'shmur ba'omer shal oif plony tahor. The case is where the seller says that they come from such and such a bird, which is tahor. So now, in other words, the idea is we can compare ourselves. We can go and then bring other eggs of that species and see if they're the same. So therefore, we can assume he's not going to lie because he'd easily be found out. So the Gemara asks, why do we need shal oif plony tahor? V'leimah shal oif tahor. Why don't we just say straight out? Why can't he just say that it's from a kosher bird without specifying which one? And the answer is exactly that. Ihachi isru lishtamuti, then he would easily be able to evade it. Even if you find that it doesn't do, you think that it's an egg of a certain bird, and you're going to go compare it and say it's not the same, he's going to say, well, I didn't mean that bird, I meant a different one. As we learned before, there are many, many different species of kosher birds, so therefore, of kosher and of non-kosher birds, so therefore it's he'd more easily be able to evade it. But if he explicitly tells you, this is a chicken egg, this is a dove egg, this is a whatever, all the different kosher species, then it's easy enough for you to compare. Tosfos brings up a point that, as it is, we learned before that the number of kosher species of birds is a majority against the other ones, so it should be enough just to follow the rove. But Tosfos points out, after all, we did learn, when we said we learned before, for example, here the Torah only was 24, but we said, and then we said, fine, some of them include Minehu, which means other subspecies, but we said that, for example, just within the Ayah, one of the kinds of bird of prey over there, we said there's 100 subspecies. So therefore, when you get down to it, Tosfos says, it may well be that if you were to narrow down the definitions, you might actually find that there are so many non-kosher birds, maybe if not more than the number of species of kosher ones, at least a large enough number that there would be an issue. You have different other answers that Rishonim give, including the fact that since you can check for yourself, then we can't just rely on something like that. We have to be able to actually, we have to actually be able to know for sure that it's from a kosher bird. Now, the Rambam has a different girsa in our Gemara over here, which is that not we're allowed to trust a goy, but we're talking about rather, in the case of a goy, he says you can't buy them unless you recognize with tvias ayin, unless you can recognize on sight that these are from a particular kosher bird. So it's not just, in other words, that the goy can tell you these are chicken eggs, these are whatever. You would actually have to be able to recognize yourself, according to the Rambam, that these are from a kosher, that these are from a kosher one. And then the idea that Amman would understand that rather our Gemara is talking about not about a goy, but rather about a yid who doesn't have a cheskas kashrus. So fine, at least though, if we can figure out that he's not lying, then at least we can trust him, but a goy, we need more than that. Lamaisa, nowadays, we buy eggs, and the vast majority of eggs that are sold anywhere in the world are chicken eggs, so we don't have a problem with that. Again, the fact that they might conceivably be from a nevela or a treifa is not a problem, because such birds are a minority. But it is true that if you're going to buy the more exotic kind of eggs, they sell, for example, quail eggs and things like that, then you would have to follow these rules to know for sure that it is in fact from that. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Validik the simonim." Why is it not enough to just check the simonim of the eggs? Why do we need to have the goy or the yisrael chosher to point to the different explanations? Why do we have to tell him this came from such and such a bird, and he has to identify the bird by name? Why isn't it enough that we check the simonim of the eggs and then recognize that way whether it's a kosher egg or not? The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, "Kasimonim beitzim, kasimonim dovin." The simonim of eggs are just like the simonim of fish. So you want to interject 1 second. Simonim dogin, stop that. What do you mean the simonim of fish? Snap of keskesis, amanachmon. In the case of fish, the simonim are that it has fins and scales. That has nothing to do with fish. So ela ema. No, rather what the b'naisa means is kach simonim de ubre dogin. The simonym of eggs are the same as the simonym of ubre jogim. Ubre jogim literally means fish guts. Rashi explains it means when the fish eggs are all connected together. You have caviar, for example, is made of that. You have a bunch of fish eggs, and you have a bunch of eggs from certain kinds of fish that are all joined together. And the simonym of them is also different girsa the Rif has is kirve dogim, which also means fish guts, but whatever, it means the same thing. It means, in other words, that when you have the you have these eggs that are all joined together, that as they come out of the fish, then the simonym of bird eggs and the simonym of fish eggs are similar. Namely, Elohim simoni beitzim. So the following are simonim of eggs. Kol shekideres. When the egg is kideres. So Rashi explains kideres comes from the word kadur, which means a ball. So it's ball like. Toysfus brings a different gusa, that the word is kideres. Brings that Rashi himself, and it has this gemara is also in Avodah Zarah. Rashi over there has a girsa kided des with a dalad, which would mean meloshen kad, meloshen a jug, which is round. So either way, in other words, the egg is roundish, va'agogolus, but it's roundish, it's oval, it's not round. Rashi points out you need both words. If we just said agogolus, then it would mean, in other words, it can mean it doesn't have to be round in three dimensions. It could be flat. It could be flattened, for example, like Rashi said, like a lentil or like a wheel of cheese. So therefore, you need kaideres. It needs to be like a ball that it actually has a three dimensionality to it, as far as the curvature. But then that's kaideres v'agogolos. So it needs to be, you know, in 3D. It has to be what we think of as an egg. But more to the point, roisha echad kad v'roisha echad chad. It has to have that one end of it is rounded like a kad, like a jug, and the other end is chad. The other end is pointier. Tahora, then you know that it's an egg from a kosher bird. Shnei chadin, but both ends are rounded. Or both ends are pointed. Tmein, then you know it's from a non-kosher. Then you know it's from a non-kosher bird. So now we're saying the same thing applies to fish eggs. That fish eggs also have a similar kind of thing as far as whether. Whether they're from kosher fish or not. Tosfos has a bit of discussion about that when we're talking about these simonim over here, and the Gemara is going to soon discuss are these simonim valid on a daraisa level or not. Tosfos discusses that with fish eggs, it's not really so much that the Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, not so much that about pointy at one end and rounded at the other, but rather that kosher fish eggs are rounded and they're elongated. They're more ellipse shaped or oval shaped rather than round, whereas the ones of non kosher fish are more rounded. So then Tosfos says that actually may be that's basically kind of what we're saying in the Gemara over here about the egg being elongated and not perfectly round. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, it brings another interesting idea that the difference is also in the color. The difference can be in the color of them that you have. It discusses that there are the eggs of kosher fish are red, and the eggs of kosher fish are red. Whereas when you find black ones, then Shulchan Aruch says you wouldn't be able to eat them. And the Beis Yosef explains, in other words, that they figured out in earlier generations, as a practical matter, that there were no kinds of red fish eggs that were not kosher. Among black eggs, some are allowed, some not. So therefore, that would be a reason. Although the Shach brings and then says that it's not so simple, we can't really say that. So practically speaking, this is Negea, as far as when you want to buy caviar. You have certain kinds of caviar where you have, for example, the fancier kinds of caviar, in fact, are black eggs. Would those kinds of things be mutter, based on all of this? Maybe not, unless you know for sure that came from a kosher species. The more expensive kinds of caviar come, for example, from sturgeon, which is generally accepted as not being a kosher fish. So you can't just buy any caviar, and some of the fancier kinds you may not be able to have at all. They say, by the way, a cute vote on this about the eggs having about the egg having one rounded end and one pointy end. That it's kind of the same thing with if a person wants to be a successful Talmid Chacham. He has to have a round bottom, meaning that he has zitzflesh, he has the ability to sit and learn for a long time, and he has to have a sharp head. But if both of them are rounded, so he has the ability to sit and learn, but he doesn't have a very sharp head, or if both of them are pointy, meaning that he doesn't have any zitzflesh, then he may not be so successful. He still has to learn Torah, of course, but he may not be so successful as a Talmid Chacham. Okay, the Braisa continues. Chilbon mibachutz. If the white of the egg is on the outside, like in the eggs that we're familiar with, the chelmon bibifnim, and then the yolk of the egg is on the inside, tahora, then you know it's from a kosher bird. Chelmon mibachutz, the chelmon bibifnim. But if you find the yolk on the outside and the white on the inside, tneya, then it would be from a non kosher bird. Sichas Cholin points out, he says in all of his examinations and all of his researches and everything, he never came across such a thing of an egg that has anything like that. So he has space in his book for all the diagrams that he illustrates. He actually he left that blank. He says, I'm leaving it blank. Maybe one day I'll come across such a thing, but right now I never have. So what the Gemara means by that, he says, maybe it means that the yolk is not, you know, to find, I mean, after all, the whole point is the yolk is what the chick develops from. It is going to be protected normally by the, is going to be all surrounded by the white. So he says maybe what the Braisa means is when you have them next to one another, like you have the yolk is not completely surrounded by the white. And he says, Tzarechim. Anyway, continues the Braisa. Chelman v'chelban muroven zebazeh. If you find the yolk and white of the egg, are mixed with one another, or not even mixed, but Rabbeinu Yerucham says even just that they're just kind of attached to one another. Normally, you know, in eggs like we're familiar with, you have a thin membrane around the yolk that keeps it separate from the white. But here in these kind of eggs that we're going to talk about now, then you don't have that. So then anyway, biyadushi beitzas asheretz, then you know that it's an egg of a sheretz. You have among the shmona shrotzim, some of them are reptiles, and reptiles lay eggs. So therefore, you'd be able to tell that this is an egg of a sheretz. Now, I mean, it's not kosher anyway, but why do we need to mention the point that it's a sheretz? That the Gemara is going to deal with later down on the onward. In any case, the point is, we see from all of that there are simonim to be able to tell between kosher and non-kosher eggs. So then in that case, why do we need the goyish seller, or according to the Rambam, the Jew who doesn't have a cheskas kashrus, to tell us this comes from such and such from such and such a bird and identify it? Why can't we just check for ourselves and see that it has the shape and the contents of a bird, of an egg of a kosher bird? And the answer is leitzricha dechatuchos. The case that we're talking about over here is where the eggs are cut. Rabbeinu Gershom just says that it means that the shell is cut. In other words, they're raw mixed eggs, and you haven't now you can't tell anymore. But another explanation is that it means that they're hard boiled and cut up like an egg salad. Okay, so the Gemara asks still for the vote. So chatuchos, in other words, chatuchos then would actually mean that chatuchos would mean that they're cut up, meaning we can't tell the shape of the egg anymore. So we'd have to talk about them again, you know, the raw eggs, but they're like sunny side up, for example. So the yolk and the egg are still distinct, but the shell has been removed, and now we can't tell the original shape of the egg. Okay, they might ask, still, for b'chelman b'chelban. Okay, but fine, still, why can't we check about this thing about the yolk and the white and see what their respective positions are? Why isn't that good enough? And the answer is b'trufas b'kayra, because we're talking about where the eggs have actually been mixed together in a bowl. So the eggs have been the yolk and the white have been mixed, like you have when you make scrambled eggs, or like when you make omelets or whatever. And therefore, you can't tell anymore. So now you need the goy to be able to tell you that it came from such and such a bird. Now the Rashi points out then, well, wait a minute then, in that case then what's the point of him telling you it's going to come from a kosher bird? The whole point was, we said before, we're going to be able to compare it and see whether it's similar to an egg of another bird. Now when it's been mixed together, you're not going to be able to tell. So the Rashi says, yes, the Gemara could have an answer at this point. Of course, the Goy is not believed, but the Gemara is going to rather give a better question, that the Braisa is going to say that anyway, you're not allowed to buy. And anyway, you're not allowed to buy mixed eggs like that from a goy. And then the Rashba says, maybe indeed you could. You could take a bird, another egg from that bird, and do the same thing, and then shell it, and mix the yolk and white together, and see if it works. Okay. Anyway, so Gemara answers so that's what Gemara asks. In a case like that, where the eggs were stirred, could you even buy such eggs from them? You're not allowed to sell an egg from a trefa bird to a goy, because he might resell it to a yid. So we said before, when you're buying eggs, you buy eggs in the store, you don't have to worry about nevelos or trefas. But obviously, if you know that a particular egg comes from a nevelo or a trefa, then it would be also. So now, you're not allowed to sell such an egg to a goy, a different girsa. Yeah, different other gusois are beitzas nevela or beitzim nevela, shell nevelas for shell trefas. And I know there are different discussions about that. But yeah, we learned earlier in the parak that when you have a bird that's suffered trefa, for example, then you can't, you have to hold on to the eggs from its first clutch of eggs that happened and that it laid around that time, and then see if it then develops a new clutch of eggs and lays them, then you know that it's not a trefa. So now you have you can't eat an egg of an avela or a trefa. So now the question becomes, So the Braisa continues. So you can't sell it to a goy, Ellen can chew from a kaira, unless it's mixed and unless it's stirred in a bowl, because then you'd be able to sell it to a goy, precisely because then he's not going to be able to resell it from a yid. And because of that, in what can then baits and chew a kaira. And precisely for that reason, you can't buy from them eggs that have already been mixed in a bowl. So what are you telling me that the case before we were talking about where you want to buy eggs from the goy, and you're saying that you could, as long as he tells you it's from a certain min, and the question is why we need him to tell you it's from a certain min when we could check for ourselves, and the answer is that the egg was already shelled and mixed together. Well, in that case, you wouldn't be able to buy it from him based on this last advice. And in fact, Tosfos points out that's the point. In other words, the very fact you don't normally sell eggs like that in the first place. People usually buy eggs and then break them open and then start dealing with them themselves. So now, why would a goy be selling already shelled and mixed eggs? Very possibly because they're from the Davis of Tosfos, and he bought them already in that state, and now he wants to resell it to you. Tosfos brings in that connection that, on the other hand, for example, if you buy dough from a goy that has eggs, the batter, the dough, has eggs mixed into it, so fine, there may be a problem of bishul akum, but when there's no problem of bishul akum, then Tosfos says there may not be such an issue, because then it's normal to have eggs in it, and then the fact that he's selling it in that form doesn't raise any suspicion. Tosfos also mentions in this connection, by the way, that what we were saying before, that nowadays you don't really need the goy to tell you specifically that it comes from a particular species, because most of the birds in our areas are in fact buffalo birds. And certainly, nowadays you buy a dozen eggs in the store, and it actually says on them chicken eggs. So then all the more so they are actually saying that it came from chicken eggs. In any case, so the question is again, so what's the story? If we're talking about that you're buying the egg from a goy whole, then you don't need him to tell you it comes from a certain one, because we can tell based on the shape and based on the contents, like we said before, that's from a kosher bird. And if, on the other hand, we're talking about buying it from him already stirred, then you can't buy it from him like that in the first place. Rabzeda said, no, simonim la daraisa. The simonim of eggs that we said before are not daraisa. They're not halakha l'mishum yisimai. So they're based on practical, they're based on practical observation, but not necessarily is it always so. These conceivably you could have eggs of non-kosher birds that also have the same characteristics. And he says, did you like Tema Hachi? If so, if you weren't going to say like that, if you were going to say that these simonim are an absolute proof, Chodah Amar Abasi, what have we learned before on Daf Samach Beis? Shmoinah Sfeifah, and we said there were eight types of birds that there were a suffix, because we said over there you can't peel the gizzard normally only with a knife. Why would there be a suffix? Livdik Rebates and Gigul. We'd have to do is check the eggs and see whether they have these simonetara. Elishma Minos Simonim Lav Daraisa. Therefore, that shows that Simonim are not in fact Daraisa, and therefore you can't, and therefore you can't necessarily rely on them. So now we're back to them. You can't say that automatically you could buy an egg from a goy, and as long as it's oval and pointy at one end and rounded at the other end and so forth, then automatically you can buy it from him. Now we're saying it's not necessarily Daraisa to do that. Not necessarily Daraisa to be able to rely on that, and therefore you'd need the goy to tell you that it actually came from a certain species. Well, the Gemara says Elul Ma'ichel Sekatani. Well, then what was the point of mentioning these halachas in the first place? Then, and the answer is Hachi Karma, because the Braisa does mean there is still a nafkamin for Shnei Rasher Chadin, Shnei Rasher Chadin. If both ends are round or both ends are pointy, or Oichelman Mimachos Vachelman Mimifneim, or if the yolk is on the outside and the white on the inside, Vaday Tmei. Then there's no question. It comes from a non-kosher burger. Even if he tells you this is a chicken egg or this is a quail egg or whatever, no question he's lying. Reshe chad. It's funny how we hear the word chad, the two words chad over here, but the first one is Aramaic and means one, and the second one is Hebrew and means sharp, pointed. So reshe chad, if one end chad is pointy, reshe chad chad, and the other end is rounded. Then, and the white is on the outside and the yolk is on the inside, then it might be from a kosher bird, but not necessarily. If now the goy tells you that it comes from such and such a bird, and that this bird is a kosher species, well, if he tells you that it's from a certain bird and you know that species is kosher, then you can rely on that, because then you have the simon, but you also have the point that he's telling you what bird it's from, and therefore you would be able to check on him, and therefore he would be afraid to lie. But just the stomach, without him telling you that detail, that it comes from a particular bird, you can't just rely on them. Because, for example, you have the bird, you have the eggs of a raven, which are very similar in shape to those of a dove, and therefore, so now, for example, the guy's going to sell you eggs, and you think for yourself that they're eggs of a dove, but really it turns out they're from a raven. So he would have to tell you they're from a dove. Then that way you'd be able to check up on him as well. So in other words, we can't really rely on these simonim. So again, if it was Misinai, then we would say we don't care about that, because it's how often do people sell raven eggs. But now that we're saying the simonim are not Daraisa, then we're saying that the simonim by themselves are not enough, and you need an identification of a bird. And the Ramban points out in that connection that in fact there's not necessarily is the raven the only kind of bird like that. Conceivably there can be other ones as well. Although the Sefer Yireim says that maybe not, maybe the Gemara does in fact mean that the only other bird that has that characteristic is the raven. So the bottom line is, in other words, you can't just buy eggs from a goy, even when we're talking about raw, unshelled eggs, without verifying what species they're from, because there are non-kosher species that have eggs similar in shape to those of kosher ones. Tosfos has a long discussion about all of this and about what we were talking before about fish eggs. So Tosfos brings from Rabbi Natan that by fish eggs there might taka not be a problem, and therefore it would be fine. But then Tosfos also goes on to bring another opinion that says that all of those things, even the simonim of eggs, of fish eggs, also you can't rely on just the shape over here, and you need other considerations as well. And again, you have the Beis Yosef bringing in his Sefer, the Beis Yosef, and later on at Shulchan Aruch, that there's a difference between red and black, that all the red ones are mutter, and black, some of them in principle might be mutter, but because of the confusion, therefore we ask for all of them, but again, we have the Shach saying not necessarily so. And again, Tosfos brings in this connection also that when you have various kinds of baked goods, can you buy them that include eggs in the recipe? Can you use them? So now you have the problem that it might be, first of all, you have a problem with Bishul Akum anyway. But anyway, Tosfos discusses that not necessarily. Even though they have eggs in the mix, that wouldn't necessarily make them be considered Bishul Akum. They might, in the end, be considered bread or cake or something like that, where it's better not to eat Pasakum, but you have more of a heter for it, and therefore it would be fine. Practically speaking, of course, nowadays, with food technology being what it is, you can't just buy these kinds of things without a heter anyhow, because they have all kinds of other ingredients and chemicals and whatnot that they put in them, some of which might come from non-kosher sources, and therefore, if they're if the recipe contains eggs, anyway, whoever's giving the hashgacha on the to make sure that the other things, that the magnesium stearate and the whatever else, and the food coloring and whatever that they put in it is kosher, is of course also going to make sure that the eggs themselves come from kosher species. Fine. Now we said earlier in the Braisa, that if the white and the yolk of the egg are mixed together, be a duashi beitzes asheret, then you know that it's an egg of a, then you know that it's an egg of a sheret, where again some of the sherets are reptiles and therefore they lay eggs. So if you ask the Mahilsa, why, what, as far as what halacha is that relevant? Either way, whether it's an egg of a sheretz or whether it's an egg of a non-kosher bird, either way you can't eat it. What's the difference? Why do we to the bride? Why doesn't the bride have to say that beifes as a sheretz? Let us just say simply that, that it's awesome. So the answer is, Amar Bukhubafama, Loimar tells us something else. Shein Rikma, that if the embryo is forming inside the egg, the nikva, and now there's a hole in that egg, or on the side over here it says it should be matame bakadosha, it would make a person tummy when he touches or carries it, even if it's only the size of a lentil. Namely like this. We know that the Shemona Shirotzim, when they're dead, are matami. So now you have this egg with a baby, with a baby tsav or latar or whatever the other species are growing inside it. So when the egg has no hole in it, then it's impossible to touch its contents. Therefore, it's not going to be matami yet. The egg is called there is a concept we're going to discuss in detail later in our Masechta called shomer. You have sometimes where you have a food is able to be metabol tumor or able to transmit tumor, and also the shomer, also the peel or the shell of it or whatever, joins in that as well. But that requires that it should be possible to touch the contents on the inside. Here, where the egg completely surrounds the unborn sheretz, you wouldn't be able to touch it. Therefore, you're not yet. And therefore, it's not yet metamine. But now, if you have a hole in the egg, where now conceivably you could reach in and touch the unborn baby in through that hole, then even if you touch the outside, even if you don't touch the inside, even if you only touch the outside, then already the egg is considered a shomer, and now it becomes tamei along with the sheretz. And even the Gemara explains later on, even if the hole is only the size of a hair, so what? Fine, you can take one of your hairs that's attached to your head, conceivably, and stick it in through the egg and touch the thing. And after all, when a person's hair touches something that's tummy, then he himself becomes tummy. So therefore, so the point is now, and a sheret, the minimum size of a piece of a sheret that's matami is when it's the size of a lentil. So putting all that together, then it means that if you have this unborn, Achbar, or not Achbar, if you have this unborn tsav or latar or whatever among the Shemoneh Shrotzim that's inside this egg, once it reaches the size of a kadasha of a lentil, if now the egg has even a tiny hole in it, then a person who touches or carries that egg is going to become tamed. So therefore, that's why it's important for us to know, not just enough to say this egg is not kosher, you also have to know that it has implications as far as the halachas of tumah v'tahara. But Maskech Ravina, but Ravina questions that, the Duma de Nochashi, why this egg could equally well be from a snake, and a snake, snakes do lay eggs, but they're not one of the Shemoneh Shrotzim. Now Marsha actually elsewhere learns that a dead snake is metame, but only because I is like a regular novella, whereas over here, the Gemara seems to be implying that's not metame at all. So what do you mean? It's a beta sasher, it's an automatically therefore it's metame. It's not necessarily from one of the shrotim that's among the Shemona shrotim. Elo Amar Rava, so Rava says no. Rather, the reason why the Braisa has to tell us it's an egg of a sheretz, chin rikma, it means that if the baby is forming inside there, now he eats that egg, loika ala mishum sheretz asheretz ala aretz, and he'll be getting malchus for eating sheretz asheretz ala aretz, a creature that swarmed on the ground. Meaning, in other words, if we just said tmeya, then it would be also on the grounds of oif tamei, and then the person would have to be warned, like this you have, we're going to talk about at the end of our parak, you have different isurim in the Torah, about different kinds of creatures you're not allowed to eat. And as usual, the rule is, in order to give a person malchus, you have to give him the asura, the appropriate iser. So, for example, a person's about to eat nevela, and you give him a and you give him aserol. Let's say you're eating basa b'chola, that wouldn't work. So you wouldn't get malchus. By the same token, over here, we need to know that this egg is of a sheretz. Now, if you approach for that purpose, it doesn't matter whether it's a snake or anyone one of the shrafim that's in tamei when they're dead. Either way, the point is the Torah tells us you can't eat sheretz as sheretz on the earth. Because that swarm on the ground, and that includes them. That includes them. This egg that already has a baby forming inside it. So therefore, we need to know that. Tosfos brings up a point, and even if there's no baby forming in it, we have a concept called kola yotzim and atome tome. Anything that comes from a non-kosher species is itself not kosher. So, which is why we were saying before, that's why we were talking about, why were you talking about b'chlal before, about the whole matter of eggs, which ones you're allowed and which ones you're not allowed to eat. Because a non-kosher species, you're also not allowed to eat the eggs of it. Actually, the Gemara is going to take up that point. The Gemara is going to take up that point in Amud Beis and discuss the source for it in Torah. In any case, the point is, so automatically then, if this egg comes from a sheretz, it doesn't matter whether there's a baby forming inside it or not. Either way, you can't eat it. And either way, there should be malchus involved. So what do we care whether there's a baby forming in it? So Tosfos says that maybe actually by eggs, you could say, because after all so like this, in other words, later on, then near the end of the Masechta, the Gemara explains, on the face of it, you can ask the opposite question. Why are you allowed to eat eggs anyway? It comes out of a living bird, shouldn't it be considered Eivim Anachai? And the answer is because we have a pasuk that mentions that Shabbat HaKam, that mentions that you can take the eggs for yourself, implying that eggs are kosher and they're not considered Eid Menachai. Well, then, by the same token, you could have argued that even if it comes from a non-kosher bird, fine, you could say from a non-kosher bird, we're going to learn on Amud Beis, a limud that is also, but maybe from a sheretz, you wouldn't know that. Maybe, in fact, the same way, since it's excluded from Eid Menachai, maybe it's not considered the minim, the sheretz at all, and therefore there would be no Isser, and therefore we need to... it comes out from what Tosfos is saying, in effect, that if a person were to eat an egg of a sheretz that doesn't have a baby in it, then it wouldn't be also daraisa. It would be also darabanan. But there is discussion about that among Rishonim and Achronim, whether in fact that's the case. But in any case, so now we're saying when it has a baby inside, then definitely it's considered sheretz, a sheretz ala oretz. It's considered a creeping thing that swarms on the ground, and therefore a person will be kind of malchus for it. But we need to know what that iser is. We need to be able to identify that specific iser in order to be able to give him malchus. Okay, so the Gemara says, Yehochi ma yirid tmeya. Well, if so, why are you specifically mentioning an egg of a tmeya? If it were a tahora nami. In fact, that same din, if it has an unborn baby inside it, would apply to eggs from kosher species as well. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, when it says kol asheretz asheretz ala oretz, when it says all the swarming things that swarm on the ground, the rabbis efreichim shem niftachoyneim, that comes to include chicks that have not yet opened their eyes. So in other words, even they have actually hatched out of the egg, but they haven't yet opened their eyes as they do shortly after they're born. So then they're still also as a sheretz. A gemara explains in Beitza, which Tosfos quotes over here, that this is actually appointed a Belezim and Yaakov. The Chachamim say that no, once they're hatched out of the egg, then they would be mutter to eat. So fine, the question of course is appointed of Elazim and Yaakov, but the Rashba explains the question would really be appointed of Chachamim as well, because fine, they say once it's hatched out of the egg, then it's mutter, but even they agree it's also while it's still inside the egg. So what do we care? Again, with this egg that has an unborn baby inside it, and we're saying that if it has a certain characteristic, again, if the yolk and the white are mixed, then you know it's a Beit HaSheret. What's the difference? And if it had the white and the yolk in their proper places, and it came from a kosher bird, you also wouldn't be able to eat it with the bird, with the unborn baby bird inside it. And the answer is midrabanan. That iser of eating the unborn chicks, the ones that have Elazim and Yaakov, the ones that haven't even opened their eyes, the ones that have been born but not opened their eyes yet, midrabanan. That's only midrabanan okra asmachta ba'almas. The pasuk that we're bringing is only an asmachta for it. So in other words. Yes, an egg from a kosher species, even if it has an embryo in it, is also only dirabanan. On the other hand, a basis of sheretz would be also daraisa once it has an embryo in it. And a point of Tosfos, it wouldn't be also maybe before it has the embryo in it. But at any rate, when it has an embryo, then it's definitely also. And now a person eats it, then he's higher for eating a sheretz. So that's why it was important for the Blight Sound of an Aleph to identify what to identify how we know what eggs come from a threads. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Tamar Rabbanan, Geule Veitzim Mutaris. The exudation of eggs on mutter, namely Rashi explains, when you have a non-kosher, when you have a non-kosher type of egg that was cooked together with a kosher one, so it exudes, you have flavor and whatever comes out of it, and then the tohor ones on mutter, because Rashi says the maya ba'alma, it's considered basically just like water, so it's not considered, in other words, that it's not considered they actually absorb enough of a flavor. So therefore, it doesn't really have the ability to cause that the other eggs in the pot should be able to absorb a flavor. Prima Godin discusses that, does the Gemara mean that it doesn't give a flavor at all? Or does it mean it gives a flavor, but it's kind of a weak one? And look, if we say that even a mashahu of flavor is going to answer, well, then it would be a problem over here. In fact, the Yenis and Ibishitz in places points out, when you're talking about eggs don't give a flavor, in practice, we can see they give a flavor, but it means, in the words, that we would need shishim to be mevatalit. When we say it's kemayim is a lashon zuzma, fine, you wouldn't, but it means, in other words, you wouldn't need 60, you wouldn't need 60 times as much to be mevatalit. So that's according to Rashi. Tosfos explained, and now later on in all the sechta, we're going to talk about there's a difference between what kind of yule datesim are we talking about? Was it from a kosher? Was it from a treifa species? Was it an egg that had a chick in it, etc.? So Tosfos brings from the oro that yule datesim means the word gil means to expel. So therefore, what it means is that you hit a hen on its backside and it caused it to miscarry eggs that are incomplete. So we're not talking about cooking at all. Rather, we're talking about geulei beitzim, where these eggs have come out of the hen, not completely formed. So then that would be the case for saying that such eggs are mutter. Then that's Tosfos' explanation. Okay. Next, beitzim muzores. Beitzim muzoris, what about addled eggs, which is that, so Rashi explains these are eggs that were created without a male being involved, so these are unfertilized eggs, in other words, unfertilized eggs. Nefesh yofa toslim, if a person is not squeamish, then he can eat them, because there's no issue in them in halacha. In Shulchan Aruch it brings that in such eggs, in principle, even if you find blood in them, it would be mutter, because such eggs are never going to develop a baby, and therefore the blood in them is clearly not the beginning of the formation of a chick. In practice, we throw out an egg whenever we find a blood spot in it, but in principle, it would be mutter under such conditions. Anyway, that's a point of Rashi, that Beitzim Muzores means unfertilized eggs. So the Ran has a different explanation, and it means eggs that have been sat on by the hen. So the hen sits on the eggs and incubates them, and eventually a baby starts forming inside it. But the baby hasn't started forming inside the egg yet, and therefore so now it's a normal person might not want to eat such eggs, because already they're not as clean and they're not as they were originally. The yolk and the white are already starting to change consistency, but if you want to eat them, gizum to hate, you're allowed to eat them. So the word muzoris literally means strange. So according to Rashi, they would be called strange in the sense most eggs are usually produced by the male and the female mating, and here they're not. According to the Ran, the vote would be that muzoris comes from a word that means woven, because it means once the hen has sat on the egg, then the proteins in it start getting denatured by the mother's body heat, and therefore they start turning into like thread-like filaments. Next, let's talk about blood in eggs. The Braisa continues. Nimtzala kodet dam. If you find in the egg a drop of blood, zodekas adam ba'ofos ashar, then you can throw out the blood, but you can eat the rest of the egg. So according to Rashi, here we're talking about Now, see here, yeah, Rashi does explain that the Beitzim Muzores, it means both. In other words, Rashi is saying basically that it means they're not produced by fertilization with a male, but also the mother has already sat on them for a while. So now, if you find a drop of blood in it, Zodikas Adamba, Echos Hashar, you can throw out the blood and you can eat the rest. So Rashi implies that we're talking about even when the egg was fertilized and therefore the blood in it is the actual beginning of the formation of a baby, then nevertheless you would still be able to eat it, provided that the blood is not in a certain place in it, as we're going to go continue talking about in the Gemara. The Ran, on the other hand, says that no, what it means is that specifically we're talking about unfertilized eggs over here. Okay, so Amar Rav Yumi, Avusha Nimtzal Kesher Shalom. So Rav Yumi says that when we say you're allowed to eat the egg, is only if the blood was found on the kesher of the egg. So like this, you have inside an egg, so you have the yolk in the middle of it, and you have the point at which the egg, was fertilized. You have a structure over there inside the egg, which is attached to the rounded end, and that's where when the chick begins forming, it begins forming over there. So therefore, the point is, it actually says that you only have one drop of blood there; it hasn't yet spread to the rest of the egg. On the other hand, the Gemara is going to go on to say, once you find that on the yolk, then it means it really is that a baby is beginning to form over there, and therefore it's going to be. That's according to Rashi, and then Tosfos discusses another way of understanding it, which is first of all, where is this kesher exactly? Rashi is saying that the kesher is on the rounded end of the egg, and that represents the point where the male's seed is now starting to fertilize the egg. In fact, the Beis Yosef said it was a mistake in Nashon's, and it's an obvious mistake. It's supposed to be the pointy end, because that's where you actually find it, and a number of Rishonim say that way. So first of all, you have a machlokas where exactly this catcher is. So in fact, what you actually have is there are 14 ligaments on both ends that help hold that help stabilize the yolk and hold it in place. So now the question basically becomes, which of those is considered the kesher? So again, according to Rashi, if you find the egg on the kesher, then it's still mutter. But if you find it in the rest of the egg, then it would be osur. And Tosfos has a long discussion over here about different other ways of understanding it, about whether it means that on the contrary, when it's on the kesher, the osur min ha-torah, because then it's considered basically flesh, because that's where the chick starts developing over there. As opposed to when you find the blood someplace else, then it just means, in other words, it was because the mother was injured or something like that. So the Gemara continues. So the result of this, I mean, eventually la halacha, the result of all of this uncertainty where the kesher is and when it's osur and when it's mutter, the result is that we have the common practice that we have nowadays, that even with unfertilized eggs, you find a blood spot in it, you throw the egg out. Sometimes in an egg, you'll find not so much a blood spot, but like a little brownish thing or whatever. That is not necessarily considered a blood spot. Maybe then it would be mutter. In any case, the Gemara continues. Tony Destoy, Avur de Rav Aftariki. Destoy, the father of Rav Aftariki, Torah Braisa, I guess his son, Rav Aftariki, was better known than he was. Anyway, he teaches a Braisa. Lo Shano El Shemimsa Al Chelben Shalom. All of this applies only when you find the blood spot on the white of the egg. Avon Nimsa Al Chelben Shalom. But if you find it on the yolk of the egg, also, then Afilo Beitz Astur, or then the entire egg is Astur. My timer. Why is that? To shut a tichla bekula, because at that point you have like a damage, a ruination, meaning the egg is already affecting the entire egg. Rashi seems to be understanding that these two things go together. We said Rav Yumiya says that if you find the egg on the kesher shalom, and Rav Distoy is saying when you find it in the white, that those are basically saying the same thing. On the other hand, Tosfos learns that Rav Aftariki is saying that even if you find it on the kesher of the chelmon, if you find it on the kesher of the yolk, then the whole egg then the whole egg is also. And again, you have different opinions among Rishonim what exactly the Rambam, the Rabbi Hanan, the Rif, and the Rambam all bring only Rabbi Sori's statement. They don't even bring Rabbi Yirmiyahu's statement, meaning that they understand that to be a machlokes, that it doesn't matter whether it's on the kesher or not. Any place that you find egg, any place that you find blood. In any time you find blood in the white of the egg, then the rest of the egg will be mutter. But any place you find it on the yolk, then it will be mutter. Then it will be awesome. So eventually, again, we have to be choshish for all these different opinions, and that's why in practice we don't eat eggs with blood spots. So the Gemara points out to round out that discussion. Amalei Rabbi Vriyami Beit Kossel, Rav Ashi, Rabbi Vriyami from Beit Kossel says to Rav Ashi, Ibchotoni Tana Tamei Abayi. You should know one of the Tanoim, one of the people who would regularly teach Brisis in Abayi's Beis Medrash, taught Brisa the other way around. That the original version of the Brisa was the other way around. That when you find the blood on the yolk, then you're allowed to eat it. But if you find the yolk, you just have to throw out that bit of blood. Or if you find it on the white, then the whole thing is also about Abaye the Tarot in the L.A. Hoffi. And Abaye is the one who explained that he has it backwards and then explained that it means the other way around. When you find it on the white, then it's more mutter. And when you find it on the yolk, then it's more usser. So in other words, Rabbi Gavir wants Rav Ashi to know that this wasn't always the din that we just said, that of this story had said, and his braisa was not necessarily universally accepted to begin with. There was a different version going around originally the other way around. And in fact, there were shonim who learned that actually Rabbi Gavir wants to say that version is correct after all. So you have quite a lot of discussion among Rishonim and Akronim about ins and outs of this, when we say that's mutter, and again, in practice, we just ask for it all together. Okay. Now, let's talk about, though, Bechlal. How do we know, Bechlal, that the eggs of non-kosher birds are also? We talked about the whole sugya, we've been talking about that eggs of non-kosher species are also, but where indeed do we know that stuff? So the Gemara says, Amachiski, minayim abeita smeichi yasurim and atarla. How indeed do we know that the egg of a non-kosher species is also min ha-Torah? Now again, you have Tosfos pointed out at the bottom of the previous Amud and continuing on to our Amud, on the face of it, which you say it's also because kol ha-yotzei min ha-Torah, but again, maybe that doesn't apply to eggs. The same way as the egg is not considered egg min ha-Chai, maybe the same way it shouldn't be also as considered yotzei min ha-Torah. So how do we know otherwise? Kenemar, because among the list of non-kosher birds, the Torah says ve'es bas hayan. The daughter of the Yana. Now, the simple chat you would explain, as the Gemara is going to go on to ask, is that Basayana is the name of the species. But now the Gemara is understanding that Basayana literally means the daughter of the Yana. Yeah, actually, Bas Yeshla the Yana. What do you mean? A Yana, an ostrich doesn't have daughters in the sense that they lay eggs. They lay eggs, and then eventually the chick hatches out of that. And also the Ramban explains another point as well. What does it mean? Only a basayana, only a baby ostrich would be ostrich to eat, and not an adult ostrich. So there are some mafoshim who explain that maybe on a pshat level you could say that ostrich and mature ostriches, the meat is pretty tough. You wouldn't want to eat them. The only ones you would want to eat would be the young ones. But still, the Gemara doesn't like that. Ella, Ezu, so what do we mean by the Vasayana, the daughter of the Yana, Zubetzatzmeya, means the egg of the non-kosher species. So from there we learn, from that we learn by Vinyanab that the same applies to all the non-kosher birds. So when I asked, how do you know that Basayana means the daughter of the Yana, meaning the egg of the Yana, the Dumahainu Shmaya, maybe just the name of the species is Basayana. You have names that are formed in that way as well, where the name Bathsheba, for example. And the answer is lois sakadaita. Mephoshim point out that in that the question also can't be that in that case that it should have said habasayana, because the style Rashi explains on the Fumish that the style of Lashon Kodesh, when you have a compound name, that often the hay is attached to the second word of the name. For example, you have the place called Beis Lechem, and David who's from Beis Lechem is not called Ha Beis Lechem, he's called Beis Halachem. That's the style of Lashon Kodesh. So therefore, over here, Bas Hayana is perfectly good Lashon Kodesh, but how do we know? Maybe the actual name of the species is Bas Hayana. And the answer is Lo Sakadat. You can't think that way, because you have a plus even Eicha. complains about how during the siege and then during the siege and the famine in Yerushalayim before the Churban, how people were going so crazy and then were going so crazy with hunger that they were becoming they were becoming very cruel even to their own children. And the pasuk says, "Bat Ami La'achzer, the daughter of my people, the Jewish women, La'achzer became cruel, Shekha Ye'enim Bamidbar, like the Ye'enim in the desert." So there it says Ye'enim. It doesn't say Bat. It doesn't say Benoisa Ye'enim. In a couple of places in Tanakh, it talks about that ostriches are cruel towards their young. Like they lay their eggs and then they abandon them. So you have even Psukim in Eeyore that talk about like it abandoned its egg, doesn't pay attention to the fact that where it laid its eggs, they may be trampled or whatever. So Hashem put enough, so Hashem didn't give them much seichel, so they have. They reproduce enough to not go extinct. But nevertheless, though, the point is that they're cruel to their children. And therefore, they don't feed them and they abandon them or whatever. So the point is that we see from that pasuk that the actual name of the species is Ye'enim. So therefore, when in the pasuk over here it says Bashayana, then we can douse in the word Bas to mean the eggs. So the Gemara says, "Well, Loit, but you're telling me that the word Bas is not part of the name." You have a different pasuk on the other hand, Voxiv. You have another pasuk where the Navi is saying that when he's being told in the Nevuah about the Golos, he says, "I'm very sad about this. Es and Nispet Katanim, I will make a mourning like that of the jackals. The jackals make a mourning sound. The Evil to Benoisiana, and I'll mourn like the Benoisiana." So we see that the name of the species is Basiana, and in plural Benoisiana. So you see the name is Basiana. So no, the answer is no. Kiyana Zushim is Abela Salbanel. No, because what it means is the evil Kibnoisiana means like the way the ostrich is sad about its children, about its eggs. Now we just said before that the ostrich is cruel to its young, so the Tiferes Yaakov explains to its young it's cruel, but to the eggs, which the eggs are broken, then it's sadder than other birds. So they talk about, and Foshan talk about that the ostriches don't necessarily incubate their eggs themselves, they bury them in the sand or something. So therefore, they have a certain feeling towards the eggs, but not necessarily towards the chicks that come out of those eggs afterwards. So we can say the evil kidnos yana means the mourning like a yana does for its children, namely for its eggs. But not that the name is Bas Yana. Okay, the Gemara says, well, see, here is another pasuk that mentions, talking about the destruction of the city of Babel, the great mighty city of Babel, Nebuchadnezzar's capital, is eventually going to be completely destroyed and become a wasteland forever. And the pasuk says, shocking, even nowadays, the whole thing is one big wasteland. They have a lot of archaeological digs going over there, but nobody lives there. And the pasuk says, the Benoisiana will dwell over there. So ostriches, which live in desertic areas. So we see that again, Benoisiana means the actual species itself. And the answer is no. It means Yana Zushashenes in Bonel. It means like the way that the Yana lives peacefully together with its children, together with its eggs. That's how peacefully they'll live in the ruins of Babel, because nobody's going to bother them. So Voxiv, what about another pasuk? Tchabdeni Chayas Asada, Hashem says, the animals of the field honor me, the wild animals, Tanim of Noisiana, the Tanim, or jackals, or some say the Tanim is a type of snake, or whatever. Anyway, of Noisiana and the Benoisiana, again, we're putting together Tanim and Benoisiana in the sense that they both are creatures that tend to live out in deserted areas. Anyway, so they will honor me, because Hashem goes on to say that there's going to come a point when even the deserts of Eretz Yisrael are going to become flourishing areas for the Jewish people, and the animals that live there until now are going to honor me for that. So the point is that Benoisian. If you're going to say that here Benoisiana means the eggs, Beitza bas mema shira, eggs are not able to say shira. So the tanim, the jackals or snakes, or whatever you understand them, can say they can hiss and make noises in honor of Hashem. The ostriches as well, but the baby, the unborn ostriches, the eggs can't say shira. So what do you mean to chavdeni Benoisiana? Now there are the Targum on the Pasuk actually translates that it means that people will honor Hashem when they see that this place that was previously inhabited only by these wild animals, the Tanim and the Benoisiana, that now they're going to see that this place is resettled by Jews, and they're going to praise Hashem for that. So therefore, so in other words, the point is, but if so that's the point, to Tzedakah Yaakov explains, if the point is that people are going to praise Hashem when they see that, so then what does that have to do with eggs? You have the chayas asada, the wild animal, tanim and noisiana, then why bother mentioning the eggs? Just mention the yana. So no, the Gemara says fine. Elak siva yana or siva bas yana. It's true. Sometimes the species can be called just yana. Sometimes it can be called bas yana or in plural bnos yana. So now we don't have to use the explanations that we said before that bas yana every time means the eggs. The shiny hofa, but it's different over here. The reason why we can darshan from Zasiana, that it means the egg, the posik safra l'shtei tevis, because the sofer, when he writes the Torah, has to write these words, bas hayana, as two separate words. So therefore, so that shows that they're actually two different things. Mid posiko safra b'tarfi tevis. Since the sofer divides them into two separate words, shlamin up tshei shemesh minu. That shows that it's actually two words. If bas hayana was just the name of the species, then it would be written as one continuous word. Tiferes Yaakov goes on to say that, look, you know, when you have the plural, the noisiana, then I say you have no choice but to divide it into two. But if you have basayana, it could have easily been written as one word. So therefore, that shows that it's two things, and one means the bird itself, and the other one means the air. So the Gemara says Elamei Atta, but by that law, if you're telling me that every time you have a two-word name, then it means it's two separate things. The problem with that is Elamei Atta, the Es Kedola Omer. You have the name of the king Kedola Omer, one of the kings that fought against Sodom, and then Abraham fought against him. The Pasuk Safra Vatrei. Now there also, the sofer divides in its two words, Kedor, space, Omer. Now, on the face of it, that's what the Gemara is saying, is that Kedola Omer is actually written as two words. So there are, in fact, there is quite a bit of discussion about that among the Bali Amasurda, because in our Sifrei Torah, universally, they're written as one word. So one possibility is that the Masurda and all Gemara disagree. There's many places in Shas, actually, where you have such things, that the Gemara will bring a certain Masurda on a word, and the Masurda that we follow is a different one. One of the major sforim on matters of Masurda explains that means that the sofer has to read every word before he writes it. So he reads them as two words, kedor la'omer, but then he actually writes it as one closed up word. Then they have a different explanation. The Chassam Sofer says that suppose, for example, a person is just writing in a regular letter. He writes Kedor La'omer, then he's going to write it. He can write it in two words. The point is, in other words, it is actually a compound name. The Chassam Sofer brings an explanation. Kedor La'omer means he lived dur near the omer, near the sheaves of grain, and therefore it was called Kedor La'omer. Nowadays they think, based on things that they found in cuneiform inscriptions, whenever they think that Kedor is an ancient word in one of those local languages, or their Akkadian or Elamite or whatever, that means a servant, and La'omer was the name of one of their getches. So Kedor La'omer would mean a servant of this whatever. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying that Kedor La'omer, the Pasuk was Safra B'Tshrei, the Sofer divides it into two, according to these various explanations. Hachinam and Tauti Shemin, you mean that they're two names? The fact is, it's not. It's one thing. So the same way over here, just because it says Vasayana, it's two separate words, doesn't mean that it means two different things. One means the Yana, the ostrich, and the other one means its egg. The Ur Torah points out, you know, you have a lot of compound names in Tanakh. What about Bathsheba, for example? So that's why he says that the question was that when you're reading them in the Torah, you read them as two words. So Bas Hayana, you have the hay in the middle over there, which divides it into two words. And Kedor La'omer, then the lamed would also be a prefix. As opposed to Bathsheba, you don't really have that. So the answer is Ami. So the answer is Hosam B'Shtei Tevis Posik Lahu. The answer is that Kedor La'omer, yes, might be written or pronounced as two different words, B'Shnei Shittim Le Posik Lahu, but they're not written on two separate lines in the Torah. You can't write Kedor at the end of one line and La'omer at the beginning of the next line. Aval Hofa, but whatever here, when it comes to Basayana, after the Shnei Shittim, Nami Posik Lahu, the sofer is perfectly well allowed to write the Bas on one line and Yana on the next line, because they're considered something completely separate, and therefore we can in fact darshan from the word Bas that it does in fact mean the egg, and it doesn't just mean, it's not just that the name of the species is Basayana. So this is there's a discussion about that as far as other two word names like that, whether you can write them on two different lines. One question about that is, for example, let's say, so you have a name like Bathsheba. If you write a get and you have the name Bathsheba and a get, then you shouldn't do that also. You shouldn't write Bath at the end of one line and Sheva at the beginning of the next line. And there's discussion whether that's so. The Truma Sedeshin brings that he checked various Sifrei Torahs, his times, and found that all of them have Basayana on one line. It means that Sofer could write them on two lines, but not that he has to. Actually, the only place I know of in the Torah where you specifically have a minhag to write separate words, well, besides signs for the Shiras, which have a pattern of their own, but other than that, the only place where you have specifically where this has to be on this line and this on the other one is in Parshas Shemini, when you have the expression that says Moshe Dorach Dorach, that Moshe was seeking after one of the korbanos over there to find out what happened and found that it had been burnt. And as discussed, we learned about in the Zvachim a while back about what exactly happened as a result of that. So there you have Dorosh is written at the end of one line and Dorosh at the beginning of the next line, because the Gemara tells us elsewhere that that represents the midpoint of the words of the Torah. But other than that, we're saying words like Basayana and things like that over here, you could even write them. You could write them on separate lines, but you could also write them on the same line in the same way with Kedor La'Omer. And again, in all Sifrei Torah, it's universally that Kedor La'Omer is written as one word anyway.